But even these archaeologists can work magic with. There is an example of a site in northern Belgium, which comprises a scatter of stones around a hearth in one place, and a few feet away, a boulder with a scatter of stones around it. And the Belgian archaeologist who studied it was able to show that at some point during this brief stay, a person had gone over, sat on the boulder, made some stone tools. Subsequently, a second person joined him and made more tools, and then they made some bone tools from using the stone tools. One of those two stone workers was left-handed, and they showed this simply from the stone by looking at the direction of the flakes and reconstructing the flakes back onto the floor, onto the core, which is the most hideously complicated and dull archaeology you can imagine. Forget golden pharaohs. This is the real world of archaeology. Mind-blowingly simple, monotonous routine. But at this time we know that toolkits became lighter and more portable. And it seems there were none in this forest area of the elaborate bone and antler tools found in Cro-Magnon sites and used by Cro-Magnons. One reason was a major invention which probably had developed during the late Ice Age, the bow and arrow. You would think this was a very revolutionary invention. It actually wasn't, because really it's an extension of the spear thrower. And everything we see, say, in North America suggests the bow and arrow was very useful, but it didn't really have a revolutionary effect. The big innovation was that it enabled people to shoot animals from a larger distance, not that bigger, but enough where the stalking was a little easier. But it also enabled people to take waterfowl and birds on the wing. This, to you and I, may seem like a very difficult skill, but actually, with practice, you can do it. And this allowed people to eat a much wider range of meat. Stone tools became smaller as a result. Many of them small microliths. The word micros is small in Greece. Again, my classical education. But these served as barbs for spears and arrows. If you put a barb on a spear or arrow, when it penetrates the victim, it does more damage, obviously, than a simple spear point. So that was the forest people. Very simple, light population, very mobile. Along the lakes and the Baltic Sea in the north, Mesolithic societies were more sophisticated. They became very expert fowlers, taking birds, and fisher folk, camping for long periods of time near swamps and along shallow river coasts where fish and birds abounded. We're very lucky in Scandinavia because there were so many swamps and bog and so many low-lying terrain areas that we know a great deal about these societies because organic materials like wood are well-preserved. They found fishing nets, they found barbed fishing spears, they've even, as you know, in later periods, found entire corpses in bogs. And we know that these people depended very heavily on wood and fiber for fish nets, baskets, and traps. They were trapping fish like pike and spearing them in shallow lakes. And they were living in one place for much of the time. This was a very successful adaptation. By 7000 BC, some of these populations, they're known to Danish archaeologists as the Marlemose people, after a site of that name. Populations of some of these Marlemose sites had risen considerably in the most favorable locations near estuaries and lakes. The result was something that happened again and again in later prehistory. Territorial boundaries became more circumscribed. There was conflict between groups. We know this because finds of war casualties in cemeteries. Probably they were fighting over domestic matters and food supplies. But the interesting thing about these people is their society got more complex. They adjusted a bit to greater crowding. And what's fascinating about this is that although farming was introduced a few thousand years later, before 3000 BC, many of the hunting and fishing practices of these people survived in common use into modern times. despite the introduction of farming within 1,000 years later, 2,000 or 3,000 years later. The important thing about this is that by studying modern folk culture, by modern I mean early 20th century and 19th century, you can get some fascinating insights into much earlier prehistoric populations. And an archaeologist at Cambridge University called Graham Clark pioneered this approach back in the 1930s.